Good evening. Great to be with everyone once again on Tuesday Night to Learn, Parsha to Learn, messages from the Midrash. Please, of course, I remind everyone that if you have something chime in with, I'd be happy to hear it. So feel free to share at any point. So we have the Midrash Tanhuma has a lot on Parshat Vayera. I will try to get a little bit of a smorgasbord of different narratives of the Parsha. So we begin from the very beginning. Parsha begins with Avram had just received his Brit Milah. His name was just changed. He had his Brit Milah. And the Torah tells us at the very beginning that Hashem appeared to him. And he was sitting at the entrance of the tent. And it was a hot day. And then he sees these three individuals coming. So he runs towards them and tells Hashem to hold for a second while he welcomes them into his home. So Midrash has a few different comments on this, but I want to focus on one particular one. Try to pick some of the shorter ones that, you know, it's easy to sort of get a whole, whole message from it. Let's make this full screen. And I also, can I do this from here? Get a spotlight. Okay. Cut this out of the way. Okay. The Midrash begins, Vayisarina vayar vayinishl shanasim anashim nitzavim alav. Vayar vayar tzlikratam. That Avram lifted his eyes and he sees three men standing near him. Vayar And then when he saw them, he ran to meet them. So hitchil dam hamil tafte. Maybe a little bit graphic, but this is still very shortly after the Brit Milah, so there's a little bit of blood dripping in the process of doing this, right? So we know that it's remarkable that Abraham performed hachnasas orchim even as he himself was recovering from this operation, but Midrash gives it, maybe it's a little bit graphic, but it gives us even a better picture that it wasn't just that he was a little tired or whatnot, but he's really still experiencing after effects from this. So Amar lo Kodesh Baruch Hu, Hashem says to Avraham, Yischar Chayecha. So by your life, your word for this should be Zchutcha Ani Achuz Al Banecha B'Shnei Damim V'Para Misonehem. I will have compassion upon your descendants in two situations involving blood, and I will exact retribution from their enemies through blood. So there's a pasuk in Yechezkel that is said by Brit Milah, when I passed by you and saw you wallowing in blood. So So it says this phrase, two times. So let's just look at this inside for a second, that it's Yechezkel, I think it's 16:6. Right, okay, I passed by you, saw you wallowing in your blood. It seems to be referring to Abraham. And I said to you, I guess this translates, live in spite of your blood, live in spite of your blood. So one refers to the Dam of Pesach. This refers to the blood of the Korban Pesach, that when they shechted the first Korban Pesach, that they take the blood and they put it on the doorpost, and that's a protection for Klal Yisrael. So that's protection, that moment of Hashem passing over their homes is a direct reward for Avraham's actions post his Brit Milah when the blood was dripping and he went to Hachnasas Orchim. So that gets rewarded on the night of Pesach. And then that's referring to the blood of circumcision, meaning that you can't eat a Korban Pesach if you aren't circumcised. And our tradition holds that Bnei Israel did not do the mitzvah of Brit Milah when they were in Mitzrayim, but in order to do the Korban Pesach, They had to do Brit Milah. So a lot of people had Brit Milah at that moment. So in that moment of liberation, of redemption, so they are rewarded, you know, through blood, through for what Avraham did, right? There's a lot of links between Avraham and Yetziat Mitzrayim, or Avraham Mitzrayim in general, because last week we saw that that Avraham was told to breed a brit bein habitarim, that his descendants would be slaves in Egypt, but then Hashem would redeem them. So that parallel continues here with the reward for blood. And I think it gives us an interesting perspective that pain, I don't want to say suffering, but pain and even suffering is not necessarily an excuse to desist from things that are important. Obviously, within reason, right? Sometimes, you know, we have our limits. We're human beings. Maybe we're not superheroes like Avraham Avinu, but we can choose to sometimes again, I don't want to say this too assertively, but sometimes we kind of make a choice whether to take, you know, the victim stance or whether to be, you know, to overcome. And that's what Rav Soloveitchik says that really suffering is about, is sort of the opportunities that come with it. Sometimes you really can't. Sometimes we have limits and you can't. But sometimes there are moments where we can either say, oh, look at me, I'm Tom Nebuch, and I can't do anything. Or we can say that despite, you know, what I'm going through, I can muster up the energy to do a mitzvah, to contribute a little bit of good. And certainly when it comes to sort of problematic behavior in the world. So sometimes we, you know, one can make the excuse, well, look at everything I've gone through, and, you know, this is how I am, and I've had bad experiences in life, so this explains, you know, why I have a difficult life and why I act in a difficult way. Or somebody can try to say, you know what, despite what I've gone through, I'm going to muster up the resilience to move forward. So this is Avram. Avram takes the resilience route, and, you know, despite whatever pain he's going through, tries to have his research. He tries to do a mitzvah with enthusiasm. So with that, Midrash goes on to say, "Vayar vayar tzli kratam." So then Avram saw the men, who we perceive to be as angels, the yar tzli kratam, and he ran to greet them. So Amar lo Kodesh Baruch Hu, HaKodesh Baruch Hu says, "Bischar shlosh ritzot shiratzta," and as a reward for the three times that you ran, I will run in front of your children, right, three times at the time of Matan Torah. So there's three times with Avram's guess that it says that he ran, right? That first time. Avraham. Avram ran to slaughter the cattle, right, to give them meat. And this is Vayimaher Lasototo. And he hastened to do it. He did it very quickly. So those are three times that Avram did it. And then when it came to Avram's descendants at Har Sinai, so when it says Hashem Yisinai Ba Vizarach Bitzir Lama Hofia Me Har Paran. So the three times that are brought. Brother Zarach, Hofia, Atah, which Atah is sort of an Aramaic Atah of coming, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's appearances at Har Sinai are a reward for Abraham's running, right? Which is, again, you know, tells us that there are two different ways that we can accomplish a mitzvah like that. We can either do a mitzvah Achnasat Orchim with a little bit of you know, I have to, you know, I'm doing this because I have to, and you know, like I'm doing this as a favor, but don't expect too much of me. Or we can do it with Zrizut, and even if it's a little bit difficult, that we muster up the strength to do it. That sort of Zrizut, that running to do a mitzvah, is something that obviously from here we're supposed to learn the importance of. And then the Midrash goes on to say, "Ata Marta Lahan Yukach," you said to them, not let water be fetched. I'm going to give you the mitzvah Pesach, where it says "Vayikhu laham ish says." So Bnei Yisrael are supposed to take a sheep. or a lamb rather. So that yukach ba'ikhu, it seemed to be a parallel, right? So this parallel that we mentioned before, that Korban Pesach comes from as a reward for Abraham. So this gets extended in many different ways, right? It's similar language. You said yukach na me'amayim, and na comes later in the Medrash in this week's parsha when Hashem says to Avram, kach na et bincha, so na is lashon bakasha, that it's please. So Avram's politeness in saying na, and even telling vanecha mitzvah pesach atochu mimenu na, right? So when it comes to the mitzvah of Korban Pesach, so we're not supposed to eat it raw. So that comes from as a reward for Abraham's yukach na ma'amai. And when you said ata amarta ma'at, when you said ma'at, so let's just pull up that reference. Yukach na ma'ad ma'im, let a little water be brought, and we'll see in a second that he purposely exaggerated. So aniga reshitonah ma'ad, and I will expel Bnei Yisrael's enemies little by little. And you said, Maim, give them Maim. I will give them Maim in the desert. Because Hashem gave them a bear. And you said, wash your feet. So I will cleanse them of all impurity. And you told them that to relax, to under a tree. Right, recline under a tree. I need to tell them mitzvah sukkah. I'll give them mitzvah of sukkah. So we mentioned in the Simchas Beis Yoeva, for those who are there, that the mitzvah of sukkah seems to parallel Yaakov, because it's a direct reference that Yaakov built a sukkah for his cattle. So here we have this with Avram also, that because he told his guests to lean under a tree, so we got the mitzvah of sukkah in exchange for that. And Avram said, I'm going to give them bread. So Kosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to give them lechem, I'm going to give them ma. And just like you gave them milk and butter, so there's a pasuk in, I think it's in Hazin, it says, chamat bakar v'chalev tzom. Right, the butter of cattle and the milk of sheep. So all this is mita k'neged mita. Everything that Avram did to be hospitable, to go out of his way, and to provide not just provide a little bit, but to provide nicely for his guests who were total strangers. So Bnei Yisrael will get rewarded for that later. Right? Part of that is the aspect of Maaseh Avos Siman Lambanim, that which Avraham does, that which the Avos do, is supposed to be symbolic of something that's going to take place in the future, or supposed to be indicative of something that's going to take place in the future. But it also tells us the character traits that we should emulate, which I don't think I need to elaborate on. I think it's pretty clear. So this very powerful statement. This is Mikan Shanu Chachamim. From here, the sages learn that Tzadikim Omri Ma'at Osin Harbe. Tzadikim say little and do much, just like Shama said in Pirkei Avos, Emor Ma'aseh Harbe. So Avram was the model of saying little and doing much, because Avram said, I'm just going to give you a little bread and you'll be satisfied, and then he goes and he gets three oxen and nine measures of meal. It gives them a whole lot, right? It's not just a little bit of something to get them by, but he really treats them, really gives them a five-star service. This concept, Tzadikim Rimim Ma'at V'Osin Harbe, is a very, very powerful concept. I think we're all familiar that, you know, there are people who say, say a lot and do little, right? Which is the Mida of Rishayim, goes on to say, so Rishayim say a lot and don't even do a little. So we see that come up in many, many different contexts. Sometimes it's something that sometimes it's the promises we make to ourselves that we're going to do. So like the sort of resolutions we make, the vows that we make, we say, oh, I'm going to do that. We don't really deliver. Sometimes it's the things that we're told that are going to happen to us. I was trying to think of like good examples of in my own life where like somebody has been sort of a big talker and little doing. Look, it happens sometimes. You know, when you talk to consultants and they tell you you know, I'll do all of this for you, and you kind of don't really get your worth, right? Sometimes if a healthcare product says it'll guaranteed, you know, all your hair is going to grow back, and you know, what goes to show for it? You never really trust those things, right? So you have those kinds of examples. Sometimes, you know, I got one of the best examples that one can think of probably is politicians, right? Politicians, you know, frequently have to, in order to get elected, they have to make campaign promises that they know they can't keep. So that's there's always that aspect of, I say I'm going to do all of these things and never really get around to it. Sometimes it's just because, you know, we need to sort of manage our expectations. So we need to, we should be careful. Torah tells us and says in Kohelet that we're not supposed to make vows. We're not supposed to make vows that we can't keep. Sometimes it's just better to, you know, under promise, over deliver. And sometimes you see this big talking thing, even sometimes just the way people talk about their knowledge and exert their confidence. So one thing I was thinking about when I saw this was that someone once made a comment to me that, you know, that I say, sometimes I say, I think, instead of like being a little bit more assertive. You know, one time I said, you know, I'm going to try to do something, and they're kind of like, try, you know, where's the guarantee? And part of me feels like, you know, I'd rather be a little bit tentative. Obviously, sometimes there's a place for being confident. You need to, you know, people need to, you know, have a sense of a trust and comfort that you're going to deliver what you plan to do. And if you say, I think, so maybe you sound a little bit wishy-washy. You want to be confident. You want to look competent. But it was interesting. I came across something this week. It was an article entitled Three Life Goal Red Flags That Actually Prove You're More Successful Than You Think. So one of those life goals is that we don't want to think that we're wrong, right? We want to think that we're right. And if we think we're wrong, so maybe that's a sign that, you know, we're not as intelligent as we think we are. But in fact, this article suggests that on the one hand, people who talk big talk and portray this sort of self-confidence are often wrong. And at the same time, people who say, for example, I think rather than I know, sometimes are actually more intelligent than they give off. Right, I'm not saying anything about me. Maybe I say, I think, and I really don't know. And maybe I'm not, maybe I'm still not that accomplished. But there's something to be said for the fact that sometimes, you know, people who are successful, people who are accomplished, are people who don't overpromise and don't talk the big talk, but are just try to be genuine. And they just try to do things that they're not spending all their time talking about what they're going to do, but they just do it. So that's the rest of the midrash. I don't want to read the rest of it inside. But a lot of lessons that we learned from Avram here in terms of his enthusiasm, the fact that he was a doer, and Bnei Israel were recipients, were beneficiaries of that. So we just, you know, we learn a lot about sort of the chesed and the degree of enthusiasm Avram did his chesed with. I want to talk a little bit about Sodom. So when it comes to, so there's two ideas with Sodom and Lot. So first of all, so the midrash says, "Vayvosh ne'am alachim Sodoma." Two angels came to Sodom at evening. Smaktiv lamalim in inyan. What comes before? Ikash Avram v'yomar ha'aftispet. So you have this whole dialogue where Avram's trying to lobby Hashem that maybe if the people aren't as evil, you know, maybe if there's a few more righteous people than we thought, then maybe you won't destroy the city. And Amar Rabbi Pinchas Hakohen Bar Chama. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu Chafetz Chayev Kol Bria. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not want to find his creatures guilty. Shenemar Kilach Potz B'mot HaMeid. I do not desire the death of the wicked, I guess, or those who are set to die. V'chein Hu Amar Kilo El Chafetz Rasha Atan. I am not a Lord who desires wickedness. So Vamachafetz, what does he actually want? Let's seek Briyota. If he wants to find his creations to be honorable, to find them righteous, Hashem Chafetz Laman Siko. Hashem is pleased for his righteousness' sake. So Kodesh Baruch Hu wants people to be righteous. He doesn't want people to be wicked, and he doesn't want to find people to be guilty. Right? So Midrash goes on to say, Shibisman Shabriur Chotin, when people are sinning, Machisin Lefana Vehu Kwez Alehen, and they're making him angry, and he's angry about them, or they're doing things that anger him, and he's getting angry. Makrosh Baruch Hu say, what does he do? So he tries to find an advocate who will plead on their behalf. And he gives them a path. He gives them a path to do that. And that was the purpose of telling Abraham about his plan. So why does the Torah goes out of way to say that Hashem says, you know, should I hide what I'm going to do from Avram? So Avram and immediately Avram sort of stands up for them. He doesn't necessarily stand up for the wicked ones, you know, interestingly, but at least wants to try to find whatever tzaddik he can find. So the goal isn't just to say, well, the majority of them are bad, so let's just get rid of all of them. But true justice is finding the righteous ones, and it's not worth trying to pretend that they don't exist, but we want to go out of our way to find the righteous ones, right? So I think this is an important idea that gets echoed throughout the Midrash a lot. So we saw this with Noach. We didn't see all these Midrashim, but there's the Midrash that appears in Tachlumah. It's quoted by Rashi, I believe, that that talks about the whole process of building the Teva. Why does it sort of go through some of those details? Because it's meant to demonstrate that that as Noach was building the Teva, so the hope was that people would come up to him and say, hey, what are you building this for? And Noach would say, well, this is what's going to happen if, you know, I'm building this Teva because Hashem's going to destroy the world with the flood. But if you do tshuva, why not? So it obviously didn't work, but that was the goal. Also in Parsha Noach and the Tanchuma, it discusses that that the Dor HaMabul, the generation of the flood, were people who would steal. And it talked about the halacha of Gezel. There's certain situations where maybe strict justice would dictate one thing, but we don't necessarily try to get somebody who's a Gezel and somebody who's a serial robber. So you don't necessarily try to make them return everything, because otherwise they'll never do tshuva. And the goal is really for them to do tshuva. And this idea of tshuva tshilat tzedakah that we talk about with Yom Kippur, also something that comes up in the Tanchuma by Parsha Noach. I think it's Simen Yud, Simen Chet. And it mentions, Kodesh Baruch Hu mekavel dar mabul shema yasu tshuva. Kodesh Baruch Hu was hopeful that the generation of the flood would do tshuva. So you see this with Sodom also, that Sodom was a wicked city. Really, it's interesting because it seems like it was a whole world that was evil in the time of the Mabul. And Sodom is like a microcosm of it. Right? Some of the same sins that were taking place in Sodom are the same sins that took place in the generation of the Mabul. It's this whole microcosm. And here too, the Kodesh Baruch Hu wants nothing than for somebody to find Elimut Zchut. And that's Avram's role here, is that Avram was doing the right thing and confronting God. It's interestingly that the Torah doesn't indicate that Noach argued with God, and that's something that gets discussed. Even the Midrash deals with the idea of the possibility that that there was supposed to be a mechanism for giving the opportunity for the Dor HaMabul to do tshuva. But here, specifically, we learn from, you know, certain a trait that we appreciate about Abraham was that he argued with God. Right? I think it's just a very fascinating idea of what justice is. Talked a little bit about this with Mincha and Mariv, that Torah Shebichtav has, you know, very strict laws of justice. For example, eye for an eye, it's supposed to be literal. Torah Shebichtav tells us that eye for an eye really is about paying the worth of an eye, that it's paying money. So Torah Shebichtav represents a little bit of mercy. So, but that's also, Torah Shebichtav is still God's will. So even if, you know, there's a certain talk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has about being strict justice, HaKadosh Baruch Hu also wants a little bit of the mercy, but not to the expense of taking care of what needs to be taken care of. At the end of the day, if somebody is a Rasha, if somebody does wicked things, so at the end of the day, there has to be accountability. There has to be some sort of responsibility for that. So we don't ignore that. Our tradition doesn't ignore that. But at the same time, when there is an opportunity for tshuva, we'd much rather somebody do the right thing and get better and find the people who are righteous than to just condemn everything as being evil. Right? Or there's certain, even within Judaism, there's the Dead Sea Scroll sect was a sect that was very like divided. You know, there's a very big division between who's righteous and who's evil. There's very little in between. We'd rather see the gray and turn that gray into limud zchut, into, you know, find the good in people, which means that, you know, sometimes, you know, when somebody is truly beyond the pale, so you have to recognize that for what it is. You can't, you know, too much compassion is not necessarily a good thing, but nonetheless, we say in the bracha, that Hashem would much rather that we do tshuva than to punish us. I think that's all I want to say about that particular midrash. There's another midrash that related to Sdom has to do with the Malachim. So the Malachim come to Sdom. The end of the last midrash actually talks about how there were three people who came to visit Abraham to go to Sdom, and one stays back. Right, so one's job was really just to inform Sarah that she was going to have a child. And then the second angel was meant to actually carry out the Maisa of Sdom. And one was meant to save Lot. So you have these two Malachim that come to Sdom. And Amar B'yom Bar Elazar Chamishim Shtayim. This is something else. So this is also related to the same idea. Chamishim Shem Shana, Kadosh Baruch Hu Me'id Ban Shistam Mezazeh Alein Adaharim K'dei Sheyasu Tshuva. Kadosh Baruch Hu waited 52 years for the people of Sdom to do tshuva, and Shem was shaking mountains to try to get them to do tshuva. And so very similar idea. Kevan Shelo Aso Tshuva Hafacham. It was only when they didn't do tshuva that Hashem overturned them. Right? So we don't see that in the Torah, but Chazal are, you know, have this burning desire to read into the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in all these cases where HaKadosh Baruch Hu carries out evil, lest one might say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is just vengeful and jealous and carries out violence against people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu waits till the last possible moment and only then takes action. Right? And then it mentions that how did HaKadosh Baruch Hu pay them back? Paid them back from the heavens, right? From the heavens that, you know, fire and ash rained down. So Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish says, it was like an urn. It was like an urn that, and you have this today with like the modern water coolers, right? You have like the big, you know, giant water thing that sort of goes into the machine. And you have the blue button and the red button. So blue button gives you cold water. Red button, you have to, you know, press it in because so you don't accidentally, you know, have scalding hot water come out. But the red spout is meant for the hot water. So Midrash says that Kodesh Baruch Hu is like the Shemaim is like that also. When Kodesh Baruch Hu wants the cold water, meaning rain, so Minimam Tir Lechem Lechem Mina Shemaim. So when Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to feed Klal Yisrael, so he did like sort of the blue button, so to speak, right, to bring out beneficial for Klal Yisrael, but also when Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to punish Sdom, so Himtir al Sdom al Mora Gofrid ve'esh mei Hashem min Shemayim. So fire and brimstone came from heaven. It just sort of shows that sometimes, you know, it's, you know, everything's sort of there. Everything comes from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu makes a choice, you know, which to kind of, you know, whether it's going to be the man or it's going to be the fire and brimstone that come from heaven. But in some ways we sort of make that choice. We make that choice which button, you know, we're pushing and what we truly want. Next Medrash discusses the Malachim who come to Sdom also. And it says It talks about how Lot brought in the guests. And it says, because Lot was associated with Abraham, so he learned Hachnasas Orchim. It's a very interesting idea to compare Lot's Hachnasas Orchim with Abraham's Hachnasas Orchim. I think the Dvar Torah I sent last year talked about that. So Lot didn't do it with the same enthusiasm. Everything we said about Avram running and all the reward he got from running, none of that really happened with Lot. And, you know, I guess to the point, he kind of has a sort of tragic downfall. He does not do it with the same enthusiasm. He's more focused in hiding his guests than really feeding them. But nonetheless, sometimes we can have an impact on people who otherwise could turn in the wrong direction. But as we discussed last week, that Avraham just sort of through his example and through teachable moments was able to convey important ideas about Kadosh Baruch Hu. Same thing with Lot, that just through osmosis, without Avraham being pedantic or the like, but just Lot saw Avraham's example and learned a certain element of Hachnasas Orchim. He gets credit for it. Just have a couple of minutes left. I know I'm kind of speeding a little bit, but just wanted to convey some of the strong ideas. This one I think is very powerful. So this talks about the birth of Yitzchak, right? So the angels come to Sarah at the beginning of the parsha to tell her that she's going to have a child, and then it's time for her to give birth. That Hashem confirms the word of his servant and perform the counsel of his messengers. So making Dvar Avdo is Avraham. So making Dvar Avdo, this is Avraham. This refers to Avraham, Bavur Avraham Avdi. Right? Because I opened his womb on account of Avraham. And when it says that he performs the counsel of his angels, that the angels revealed to him, and you're going to give birth. Hashem confirms that which the malachim say, that Avraham is going to have a child. And same thing with Yerushalayim. However, Yerushalayim tushaf la'ar Yehuda tibanena. So it says of Yerushalayim, she shall be inhabited. How's this related to? So how is all this related? Ela k'shem shenisyashu mimenu ha'umo shelo nivnes behi tibanena. So just as the nations of the world gave up on the possibility of Yerushalayim being rebuilt. Shneimar Omer Yerushalayim Tushav, right? That Yerushalayim will be inhabited. Uktiv Kivana Hashem Tzion, Hashem will build Yerushalayim. So Im Tmei Hamatem, Abitu Avraham Avicham V'Sara Tochol Olechem. So if you're not really sure, look to Avraham. This is a pasuk from Yeshayahu. Look to Avraham and look to Sarah. So if you're not sure if Yerushalayim will be rebuilt, look to Avraham and Sarah. Shem Shasitu L'Avraham L'Sarah, just like I did for Avraham and Sarah. Same I'll do with Yerushalayim, that just like Aram Tzara needed an inhabitant, they needed a child, so Yerushalayim will be filled with children, with descendants, and the like. Right? And the parallel here is not just the fact that Kadosh Baruch Hu's goodness, but the sheer miraculousness and almost the hopelessness of the situation. Right? Abraham and Sarah had no hope at a certain point that at age 190 that they're going to have children. Most people would have given up at that point. But Kadosh Baruch Hu makes it happen. And same thing with Yerushalayim, that we might look at and say, like, look, it's status quo, it's never going to change. Jews are never going to be able to pray on Har HaBayit. The Dome of the Rock is always there. There's never going to be a Beis HaMikdash. I can't imagine Mashiach coming. It's been this long. How is it ever going to come? But we're not supposed to lose that hope. But just as Avram and Sarah were able to have a child as a Kadosh Baruch Hu promised, so too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will fulfill his promise. He's making Dvar Avdo. Right? He's going to fulfill his promise and rebuild rebuild Yerushalayim. And just, I think, just spend another couple minutes, and then we'll sign off. I'm talking about the Akedah. It's a midrash. There, again, lots of midrashim on the Akedah. There's a very long midrash that really goes through pasuk by pasuk of the Akedah with very foundational ideas. This one just kind of interested me, that it says that Hashem tested Abraham. That the first generations were tested by Hashem himself. That God tested Abraham. And the same with the generation of the Midbar. But later generations were tested by the nations of the world. And we see this with Daniel. So when that generation went to exile, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decreed that they were going to eat impure bread. And Nebuchadnezzar tries to make them eat impure bread. But Daniel did not accept it. Daniel lo kibel alav. He would not accept it. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a decree that we should eat non-kosher bread, he's just trying to test us. So we'll do our part and he'll do his part. So they start trying, saying to Daniel, Nebuchadnezzar's people started saying to Daniel, like, what, you're so noble that you can last 10 days without bread and wine. They said, yeah, bring it on. We're going to try. We can go 10 days without eating, just like Abraham went through 10 different trials. Maybe his merit will stand for us. And in fact, this is what happened, that Daniel went on this hunger strike, and he ended up being successful. So I think there's two powerful ideas that, I think we see sort of the, we live in these sort of nisyona from Umot Ha'olam, that we're always being challenged, not necessarily by direct sort of state-sponsored challenges per se, right? There's no law requiring us to eat a certain way. But in America, there's always been the challenges of keeping Shabbos, of keeping kosher, of generally living a Jewish culture, of feeling like that the grass is greener on the other side, that if only we would assimilate, acculturate, we would have a better life, we'd be more respected in the life. And that's the nisayon that lives with us to this day. At the same time, I think this is a powerful idea about Avraham being tested by God versus later generations being tested by Umos HaOlam. And in some ways, we're often very risk averse. We don't want challenges that are too hard. Another mentorship talks about that Kodesh Baruch Hu gives challenges that one can withstand. But we don't want things the hard way and the like. But if we had to choose one or another, what would we choose? And we live in a world where we're challenged by Umos HaOlam. But if one way or another, we'd have to receive challenges. So I think what we would yearn for is that challenge from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The challenge that comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that he's doing it in order to make us stronger, to make us better, because we can handle it. That ultimately is meant to foster connection. That Avraham becomes more connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu from the Nisyono. The challenges of Umos HaOlam sometimes push us away, or sometimes not welcome. But the Nisyono from Hashem, even if they're difficult, hopefully would foster a connection. So perhaps it's something for us to yearn for, to learn from them. If we have to have nisyonos in life, they should be directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and we should be able to see that sign, as opposed to feeling like it's coming from people who don't have our best interests in mind. Okay, so that's a little bit of Midrash Tanchuma and Parshat Vayera. Next week, Mirtzi Hashem, we'll talk about Chayisara.
Thank you very much.